So this is September 26, 2009, and this is the PathWork teleconference on PathWork Guide Lecture 207, The Spiritual Significance of Sexuality. And, sometimes I shorten the titles and don't realize it, so I'm going to give it its full name, The Spiritual Symbolism and the Significance of Sexuality. So this is a very powerful lecture. For those of you who are listening, I really recommend that you read it. There are lectures that are difficult to understand. There are lectures that are very confrontive about our current state of being, and so sometimes we can feel resistance to the lecture, and that shows up as numbness or irritation or a number of other things. There are some lectures that are fairly straightforward and clean. They are a delight and a pleasure to teach. For instance, with this lecture, I felt no need to add to it with other lectures because I really think that this is going to come through fairly straightforwardly and clear. So the other aspect of this lecture is it's very powerful because people care. And so I welcome your questions as we go along. And there will be a question and answer session after this recorded portion for an hour if you'd like, so that you can, if your questions are personal, you can ask them at that time. So in terms of talking about sexuality, what I like to say when I teach the spiritual qualities of sexuality is that the manifestation of sexuality is the subject of pop magazines, television, radio, discussion shows. There's so much discussion of sexuality. And that level of discussion of sexuality is really more about the effect, and that's what this lecture teaches. So sexual dysfunction, sexual desire, sexual frustration or blockage, or even the sexual drive itself, is really secondary to the cause, the actual meaning of sexuality. Now, by that, I do not mean in any way that it is minor or lesser than, but it's important to understand when you study something, if something is the effect rather than the cause, because giving a lot of attention to the effect and not realizing there's an underlying cause can invite us to say superficial about the topic. And in the staying in the superficiality, we can be very, very busily looking at things and talking and analyzing, but we don't really get any place because that's not where the real issue is. The issue is underneath. So in terms of sexuality, what are we dealing with on a effect level? Effect level, sexuality is part of our deepest, most intimate relationship. It is also a deep part of our personal fantasy life. It is a physical aspect of our life, not something that should be taken lightly. Sexuality is a deep driving force on a physical level that when dammed up, when frustrated, when blocked, when not allowed to express itself, actually causes physiological repercussions. What the guide does when he goes through this is he talks about the different levels of sexuality, how it manifests, and the effect of sexuality. And I'll go through that. And then he spends a fair amount of time talking about the underlying cause, what sexuality is all about in the first place. In core energetics, they have a pyramid that they use, and it's just a pyramid with four bars across it. And it looks like Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, although that's not what it's intended to represent. And basically what it indicates is that at the bottom level, the largest level of human existence, our needs are to manifest and take care of our physicality. So that's the base of the pyramid, of the triangle. Naturally, that would be so, because if you die, the game is over. So it is very, very important that you take care of your physicality so that you wake up the next morning so that you can continue with your life. Because everything that comes after that on a human level is secondary to staying alive. Now, when Maslow has this used this triangle, what he was trying to communicate was that humans need to take care of their physical surroundings before they can take care of the other levels. Out of noise right now, if someone would press star 6, that would be helpful. So on the physical level, when there's a problem on the physical level, the other levels cannot be paid attention to. So when you are ill, when you are threatened, when you are in physical danger, when you are malnourished, when you are facing a long-term illness, the other aspects of your life have to bend a bit so that you can take care of your physical being and, once again, stay alive. It is that simple. You need to live another day. The second level of Maslow's and the core energetics triangle is the emotional level. Why emotional? Because as human beings, our emotional level, meaning our family, our relationships, our sense of well-being, is the next level that people engage with. Think of this in terms of civilizations. Civilizations do not start out with colleges and universities. They start out taking care of the physical needs of their people, and then they take care of the emotional needs. A civilization is not going to go very far if it cannot allow its people to live happy and fulfilling lives. And people who live such lives are, of course, willing to bend periodically during times of emergency or stress. Not that we can't do without these things, but we need to have a basis. All civilizations are founded on the idea that people want to have families, protect their families, and nourish their families. So first of all, you've got to be alive to do that. That's the physical level. And secondly, the emotional level of interaction with others and self-actualization, self-fulfillment, and self-happiness. The third level of the triangle is mental. Once these other two needs are taken care of, that's when we have time to explore our minds. That's when we have time to sit down and work on puzzles, to engineer, to spend our leisure time trying to do something that entrances our mind and inspires us and makes us look at the stars or makes us look at the ground or allows us to flesh out and understand the world that we live in. And this is an essential part of human existence. But in times of emergency, it is secondary to the physical and the emotional levels. Now, Maslow goes immediately to a level of spirit and will, a sense of inner self-actualization. Core energetics adds one more level. They add the level of will alone. And what they add that level to indicate that there is a place of individualism, of ego, of figuring out who you are as a person, distinct from your family, your friends, your civilization, distinct from your animal needs, and distinct from your thought patterns. Who am I, and why does my life look like this? And then the fifth layer in core energetics, the fourth layer in Maslow, is self-actualization, or to put it more simply, spirit. That civilizations and individuals reach for spirit when they have basically taken care of, identified, and they have some measure of control or success with the other aspects of their lives. Now, that sounds a little esoteric for a lecture on sexuality, but it's not. The guide uses the same divisions in this lecture as I have just described. He describes sexuality on a purely physical level. He describes it on an emotional level. He describes it on a mental level. Those are very well identified in the lecture. He does not identify a level of ego, and yet it is in here, and I'll describe it as I go through this. And then he describes the top level of spirit, the deep spiritual meaning of sexuality. So if you can imagine that, of this triangle with a base, and narrowing as you go to the top, simply because it takes, this may sound kind of silly, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot of detail to survive on a physical level. But on a spiritual level, things can happen in an instant. Time is less important. Material is less important. What is going on in the world is less important on a spiritual level. But we don't get to that level unless we have some basic needs met on the lower levels. Lower not meaning inferior, simply meaning that there are priorities as we go through life. So that's how the lecture lays this out. Physical, emotional, mental. I'm going to describe a layer of ego, and then the spirituality. So let me walk through these now that we have a slight outline. On a physical level, the guide says something really fascinating. He says that sexuality is consciousness reaching for fusion, that is an irresistibly strong urge in all organisms, even organisms that do not seem to be alive. So the guide is describing sexuality, the drive towards sexuality, as being a universal reality for all beings. Whether or not you understand it in terms of consciousness reaching for fusion, or if you do. And one of the reasons that people study the lectures is that if sexuality is consciousness reaching for fusion, and it's instinctive in us, then aren't we going to get there anyway? Yes, many of us are. You will get there. Because of the irresistible urge, you will not give up on this part of your life. What studying spirituality does is it gives us an ability to accelerate this process. It gives us an ability to get there faster and also to be able to identify things that are holding us back. So, if we were all dogs and cats and sheep and cows and zebras and lions and tigers and bears, sexuality is an urge to be with, to fuse with the tasks that we have on the earth. And in animals, it may be just a matter of finding a mate, getting enough to eat, finding a nice place to lay in the sun, and enjoying your life. So there we are with the physical and even the emotional in the animal kingdom. But with people, we add the mental layer. And that mental layer means we want to know why. We want to know what's going on. If things aren't working, we want to do something about it, and we don't just want to bumble through life. So back to the physical again, that this is an irresistibly strong urge in all beings, which means that we're all going to be working on this, that we're hardwired in a way that makes it impossible for us to simply ignore our sexuality, like eating and drinking and activity. Sexuality is a basic force within us. And by utilizing the sexuality, we have the opportunity to move towards fusion. The more of these levels that we involve in this fusion, the more fulfilled we will be in the process, and the stronger and deeper our fusion will be. So the physicality is critical, just like the larger base of this triangle that I described. The physical is terribly, terribly important. But all by itself, it leaves us unsatisfied. And a lot of free-form sexuality, or sexuality simply for the sake of exercising that energy, becomes either compulsive or unsatisfying because it may only satisfy that one layer. I'm going to repeat this. There's nothing wrong with satisfying that layer, and that physical layer must be satisfied to some degree according to the individual's desires and needs. It must be satisfied in some degree. But if it stops there, people in general are not satisfied with a simply physical life. It doesn't mean we don't enjoy it, but we're not satisfied with it. A lot of noise in the background. If you could hit star 6, I'd appreciate it. It doesn't bring us to the place where fusion on all levels of our being can happen, because it's only one level. So for the moment, I'll leave that physical level. On the second level, on the emotional level, the guide describes that the need here to engage in emotional sexuality requires a feeling exchange. That simple sexuality without a feeling exchange is basically only satisfying one layer. The next layer of emotional need requires the sharing, the giving and the receiving and the sharing of feelings between, and we're going to narrow this down at this point to two people, although I will speak a bit about the broader sense of sexual energy and the sexual force. Right now I'm going to speak specifically in terms of sexuality between two people at one moment in time. That when people share their bodies, that is one level. But when they share their feelings, when there is an exchange and a giving and a taking of how each other feels and what is going on with each other, that this is what is needed to satisfy this second layer. And the guide describes that one of the ways you can gauge if you are successfully engaged in a mutual feeling exchange is the level of satisfaction with the sexuality. So the measurement of the measure of fulfillment, okay, is a, I'm sorry, let me start over again. Fulfillment is a gauge. Fulfillment is a gauge to the degree I'm going to start over again. This is very interesting. I'm rattling around here because I wrote it down, and I usually speak without notes, and when I do have notes, actually they confuse me. The guide spends a lot of time talking about the fact that we need to access the real person, and we need to be real ourselves. So on this feeling exchange level, we need to go past what we want the other person to be, and even beyond who we want to be. That in this level of feeling exchange, the satisfaction that you will receive from sharing yourself with another person is a direct result of whether or not you are ready to share yourself as you are and to receive the other person as they are. So in this feeling exchange, just like I described that physical sexuality can become superficial if that's all there is, in the feeling exchange, simply sharing words or going through phrases or walking through the motions, if there is any level of politeness or ritual or anything that's not real on this level. You're not truly fulfilling the emotional level of sexuality. The emotional level of sexuality is most fulfilled when you see the other person for who they are. And one of the things that the guide talks about in this lecture, which is particularly beautiful, is he it's almost like he's joking. And he says, to know another person is such a wonderful experience. How could you possibly ever be bored? Now, he doesn't say it, but I'm presuming the guide says that even knowing ourselves is a lifetime experience of exploration and enjoyment. And when we include someone else, his phrase is, how could you ever be bored with another person if you are seeing them really, who they really are? So again, we're talking about a feeling exchange on a deep, profound, and honest level, without guile, without pretense, and without hiding. So that is what is required to satisfy the emotional level of sexuality. And any pretense or guile here is simply going to keep it at a more superficial level. The next level the guide talks about is the mental level. And what he talks about here is this is a matter of sharing your mind and your ideas. And this is where it's not that you don't need compatibility in all the other areas, but physical compatibility is a decision that you make, not a reality. There is no technical reality with tall, short, fat, thin, race, ethnicity, there's no real hard boundaries regarding physicality when we talk about sexuality. And the same thing is true about emotions. There's no reason one human being cannot fully connect with another. When it comes to the mental level, there are some realities. And those realities are that one person may not be able to share and understand the mental reality of the other. And this is where compatibility in terms of... And I don't want to make this simplistic, because what it might sound like is you need somebody at your own level. But at your own level on a spiritual, holistic point of view does not mean that a college graduate requires a college graduate, or a qualified tradesperson can't have a partner who's totally illiterate and doesn't even hold a job. That's not the kind of compatibility the guy is talking about. This kind of compatibility is an ability to hear and, if not understand, begin the process of understanding the other person's dreams and ideas. So when we talk about sharing the mind, we're not talking about sharing information. But information is one of the vehicles of communication. But underneath that, what he's talking about is being able to communicate by being able to share something that the other person comprehends. Now, I'm working very hard to make this general, because that's where we sometimes get messed up. If any of you have seen or noticed personal ads, I find them mildly hysterical. Because the more precise you get when you're outlining the person you want, it seems like the more you want a cookie cutter idea of who you would get along with. So the personal ads read, I want someone who's 5 foot 3.5 inches tall, who weighs 132 pounds, who has 1.5 children, who has no baggage, which I presume means parents or friends or job experience. I want this person, and you've probably seen it. The list goes on and on and on. What is this about? This is an attempt to try to find someone that you can understand and communicate with and feel attracted to. But what we're talking about in the spiritual symbolism and significance of sexuality is a place where if your heart leaps towards another person and you make a decision to connect with that person, you will probably be able to overcome any boundary there is. And yet to totally fuse with this person, you will need to satisfy some level of physicality, some level of emotional, and some level of mental sharing, experience, having a sense that you are seen by the other person. Because if we back up to the emotional exchange, the feeling exchange, if the other person, for instance, does not speak your language, whether that is technically your language or just reading your facial expression, understanding the level of sensitivity, understanding what you're affected by and having an idea of what that is, this is all part of feeling exchange. So take two vastly disproportionately crazily matched people, and if they can meet physically and they can exchange their feelings, even on a nonverbal level, then they can go so far. But for total fusion to happen, they need to be able to share their ideas. Now, once again, if you can prevent getting too constrained about this, sharing a mental idea can be as simple as one party sitting down with, say, a camera and being fascinated by it, and the other person noticing that and noticing that there's a dream here, there's an idea here, there's something that their partner wants to do with this camera that goes beyond the simplistic realities of a camera. If you can understand what your partner dreams are, if you can get a sense of what their ideas about the world are, this is what we're talking about on the mental level. Now, that sounds very similar to the feeling exchange, and in truth it is. Just like the physical level with human beings is also indistinguishable at times from the mental and the emotional. So these are the first three levels where you the stronger the bonds are on each level and the more levels you have access to with someone, the stronger you can share with them, the deeper the fusion between the two of you can be. Now, when we come to the place of will or ego, this is where perhaps it's a bit tricky, but the guide talks at some point about that we do not truly see others, that we see what we want to see, and we may also not see ourselves. We will see what we aspire to be rather than who we are. And this is the area, even though it sounds like feeling and it sounds like a lot of other things, this is the area that I'm going to call the area of ego and will. Will is a two-edged sword like everything else. You need will to get through life. You need will to accumulate education, to make friends, to be out in the world enough to attract a mate, to do whatever it is you have to do in the world. Your will also has the ability to feel that it must protect you or protect the organism itself by shying away from things that are negative or difficult to understand or confusing or frightening. And the part of you that does that is your ego. The consciousness, the part of me that is talking to you, that is trying to string the sentences together, is the part of me that is reaching into me and finding my feelings about the lecture and my mental understanding of the lecture. It includes telling me to sit up straight. It includes telling me to project so that people can hear my voice. But the part of me that is orchestrating all that is the part I'm calling the ego. And for two people to fuse together, they also need to meet on the level of ego. And by that I mean that you need to want to be with the other person. But on a level of ego, if there's a reason why you're afraid to be close to someone and you close yourself off a little bit, and that person is not going to get to know you, which means it's going to inhibit the feeling exchange. And you, part of you is going to be closed off so that your sexual force and your sexual energy will not flow. Part of the physicality of sex is an energetic part, and that is, I think of it like flowing water. When the energy flows and there are no blockages, when it does not, when there's no force behind it, when it simply runs like a creek down pebbles in a brook, or flows like a long, soft river, it simply moves, and there's nothing obstructing it. And if there are things obstructing, it simply goes around it or waits a bit. There's not an urgency to the flow of energy. That's part of the physical level. But when you do not want to be seen by another person, when your ego mind says, I am not good enough, if they find this out, they will not like me, so I will hide or restrict that part of me, then at that point you are blocking up, you are damming up not only your physical energetic energy, but you are also hiding behind a mask on a feeling exchange level. And you are going to be preventing the person from getting to know you. Now, if you're blocking yourself on a physical level and you're blocking yourself up on a feeling exchange level, then naturally on a mental communication level, you would also tend to avoid a certain subject or over-talk a situation, try to impress someone, try to stay one place rather than letting the conversation drift the way it might naturally occur. So the level that I'm talking about will is the part of you that consciously dictates and makes decisions about who you are with, what you want, and is not in full communication, is not in full alignment with what the rest of you may want. So in effect, the conscious will is the place where dissonance takes place. If you have dissonance on a physical level, I want to eat and I want to exercise, eat, exercise, eat, exercise. Eventually you do one or both or nothing. If you have a dissonance on an emotional level, I like you, I hate you, I like you, I hate you, you may just sit there and feel all those feelings at once. On a mental level, if you say, I disapprove of this because of my values, but I like this aspect of it, so I'm back and forth on whether I want to proceed in a certain direction. But on a will level, when we hit dissonance, we feel that we need to make a decision. So it is the will that says, on a mental level, I'm back and forth on this, but I'm going to go ahead anyway. Now, there are times where that's reasonable and appropriate. But there are also times where we are trying to move forward without having resolved the conflict. And that's where the will level can mess up all the other levels and create a lot of problems for the organism and for the individual. Let me see if I can repeat this. On a mental level, we have thoughts. And the thoughts, if they're honest, may come and go, and they may be in conflict, and they are simply thoughts. You can lay them out and say, isn't that interesting? I have 15 different thoughts, and they don't seem to be congruent. They don't seem to be too coherent. I wonder what this is. on an emotional level, you can have different kinds of feelings and say, wow, look at these conflicting feelings. They're all over the map. I'm crying at funerals. I'm crying at weddings. I'm happy at funerals. What is going on here? But that's just the emotional reality. On a physical level, you can feel an urge to do something and a reluctance to. And you may literally go back and forth on your feet. You may take a step towards and take a few steps back. But the part of you that decides what to do in a given situation, that part of you is determined by your ego, by your conscious mind, and a mental process. So that's why I'm putting this in the triangle. It's in the lecture, even though it's not identified in that way. And the last level of these are levels of fusion that the guide talks about. So he literally talks about it in terms of emotional fusion, mental fusion, and spiritual fusion. And if you could imagine this triangle with all these different layers, when all five are connected, including spirit, when all five are connected, that is what the guide says happens when you are in total and complete fusion with another person. So the spiritual level of this triangle in terms of our spiritual needs, which may include self-actualization or our ability to perceive the greater reality of what we're here for. When we perceive, when we feel that epiphany, when we feel that rightness, when we feel that we are at peace with and understand, and by understand I mean that we feel comfortable with on all levels of our being what is going on in the moment. There is a place in an epiphany, in a total fusion, where it goes through all five of these layers. Our physical agrees, our emotional agrees, our mental agrees, our ego agrees, and that deeper part of us, which we can term the higher self or the real self or the divine self, child within, angel within, whatever term suits you. But the inner part of us that inspires all of this activity, when all five of those layers match, that's what the guide is describing when he talks about total spiritual fusion. And what he says, and I'm really talking about the tip of this triangle right now, what he says is that experiencing that fusion while in human form is actually, the reality of that is that we are actually experiencing what is real in the spirit world on an eternal layer. So what his phrase is that fusion is an experience of the true existence in the eternal. Fusion is total fusion. Is an experience of our true existence in the eternal. Now, why is sexuality so powerful? Because depending on the development of the individual, even a lower developed individual who does not have all these aspects in terms of consciousness can experience a physical and emotional orgasm during sexuality. Sexuality is like the great common denominator. Anybody can have it. And the quality of that sexual experience, the sense we have of whether that is fulfilling, and the ability to maintain and improve that experience on an ongoing level, is dependent upon whether we address all these other aspects. Now again, I'm trying to be very, very careful here because I do not want to leave the impression that if you are an actualized, spiritual, whoop-de-doo, that you get more sex than people who aren't that way. That's not what this lecture says. What this lecture says is that people who can totally fuse on a level are going to get a great deal of joy and pleasure out of it. And that as we add more layers to this sense of fusion, our sense of self-fulfillment and joy increases. So it is not a matter of either I get it or I don't. It is a matter of human civilization is about wanting more. Not just greedily wanting more, although we manifest it like that. But even our greedy wanting for more is propelled by a need within the organism to expand our horizon, to reach out and to have more goods so that we can rest more, so that we can spend more time doing what we want, so that we do not feel threatened. So civilization is made up of gazillion stories of people who murder and capture and purge other civilizations. But from a spiritual perspective, if we look at the spiritual aspect of this, we do this because we need to feel safe, and that's the physical level, because we want an emotional level, we want pleasure and joy, ongoing pleasure and joy. On a mental level, we want new horizons. Now, raising another or destroying another civilization may not sound like we want new horizons, but that's what it is. It's also mixed in with a lot of other things. But human beings want to conquer. We want to exercise our capacity to work out in the world. And so at one point, the guide talks about why sexuality has been repressed throughout a large number of civilizations for a large number of centuries. And what he says is that the reason sexuality is repressed, two reasons. Number one, it's so strong. You need to do something with it because otherwise it'll just bowl you over. So it's easier to nuance it and to control it and try to build a container for it than to simply let it out and not have any control at all over it. But the other aspect of why sexuality has been repressed or contained throughout the years is that sexuality not only allows us to exercise our being and reach out for fusion and access the deeper, finer parts of us, sexuality is also going to uncover and bring forward the parts of us that are negative and undeveloped. So a simplistic answer to an activity that brings forward a lot of negativity is to shut it down, instead of realizing that the negativities that are emerging are things that we need to work with. So the guide describes earlier forms of civilization as we had to restrain the sexual impulse, we had to restrain the negativities that could come up with that in order to develop spirit. And he says that because we have an opportunity now, because spirit has been so strongly developed, one of our next steps as a civilization, as a species, is to open up our sexuality and allow it to move forward more freely with less containment, because we have the spiritual ability, we have the knowledge, we have the insight to be able to deal with the negativities that will flush forward. So again, think of it like plumbing, that when you open the floodgates, you're going to get a lot of silt and a lot of debris and a lot of stuff that has come down the river, a lot of flotsam and jetsam, that's going to also come out with that. If you critique the quality of the water and say, we don't like that, it's full of junk, dam it up, you will reduce the amount of junk, the amount of negativity. But you have also dammed up the flow. What the guide is indicating is that at some point in civilization we may have felt that we had to do that. And like many other things in human life, once you've shut something off, you may believe, for good reason, we shut this down because so much negativity was coming through. And we forget when we have reached a plateau of understanding and civilization and spirituality, that it may be time to open these floodgates again, to let the energy move, to let it move freely, because we can now deal with what it's going to bring forward for us.